Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delatonia, and this is Hashtag In Writing, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, fiction, nonfiction, short fiction, long fiction. I'm just stuck on fiction at the moment. Short things, long things, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about finding a way to sit down and get your work done.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the 22-time USA Today bestselling author of a bunch of romance novels, and my new one is called Love Lessons.
And I am KJ Delatonia, the author of the novels The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, as well as the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, former editor and writer at the New York Times for The Motherlode. And we have a guest today, I'm sure you all know, because I'm sure you saw it in the big blazing introduction on your pod player, whatever that might be. But today, Serena and I are talking to Emily Henry. So quick welcome. Hi, Emily.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Emily is, as you probably know, the author of 3 novels, Beach Read, People We Meet on Vacation, and her most recent is Book Lovers. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that she is sitting here with us today in the midst of we're just gonna own this because yeah. Serena and I have both been there and done it. A thing that publicists do to writers, for writers, is to set us up to do a whole bunch of interviews all in a row on the theory. I actually think the reason they do it is that it's much easier for them if you're like, yes, I will hold Thursday. And they're like, great, I'm gonna schedule everything on Thursday. But from a writer perspective, it's quite, it's you know, like the sixth time you're asked to synopsize your book, all you can think is, I'm never writing a book with this complicated a plot again.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah. Well, and I think publicists probably tend to be a pretty extroverted crowd, and writers, you know, there's some extroverts sprinkled in there, but a lot of us are like, oh, I have to talk for 2 hours straight. And it is kind of funny because you're saying a lot of the same things and you can't remember if you've already said it in that interview. And you just start to feel like the most boring person on the planet because you're like, I have 3 sentences worth of content to provide you.
Well, we're going to ask about, I hope, different things.
Yes, this is the first writing-centric one,
yay,
I'm doing. So that's fun.
I did one of these in 2006 and it was just 3 straight hours of drive time interviews with people who mostly had not read or heard of or even thought about the book. And I did one in 17, I guess, for How to Be a Happier Parent. And I had one drive time interview. This is just one of my favorites. The guy was like, so I don't have kids. Do you think this would work for pets?
What was your answer?
I said, no. I mean, like, I sort of paused because I'm supposed to be nine. I was like, I think there are other books for that.
Yeah, right.
Like, what do I got? I don't think, if you need this for how to be, if you need how to be a happier pet owner, I have a suggestion for you.
Oh my gosh, yes. There's a very simple solution to that.
There really is.
It's trickier with kids. It's trickier. Way. You can't just, you know,
rehome them. No, people get upset. Yeah. People get really bothered.
I don't know why.
Yeah. Hey, if you, you know, babies, man, I'd hand on you.
Yeah, I love to be the person who just gets handed the baby for just like an hour. And then I'm like, here, it's yours
again.
An hour's
a long time, but I could do 3-4 minutes easy with anybody's baby. Even if it's crying, I'd be really good at that.
You guys.
Okay. All right. So I have lots of questions, but and I'm sure Serena does too. My primary one, I don't know. Where should we start? Serena, do you have a place you want to start? Because my biggest question is kind of a deeper down, like once we're into this.
Well, I have read 2 out of the 3 of your books, including the new one, which is just so great. Loved it.
Thank you.
And one thing I admire about you is I feel like your 3 books on a shelf are kind of more tightly branded together as a set than a lot of authors ever manage. And I don't mean to suggest that you are not allowed to write something totally different next time, that like if you popped up with a vampire novel, I'm here for it. But as it stands, your three titles are tightly branded together. And one, I think that's impressive. But so my question is this, is that something you set out to do, or do you not even agree with me? Because sometimes we think we know what our brand is, but then readers come along and tell us some completely different information about that. And I just wonder how you feel about that at this point in your career.
No, I think you're totally right. And honestly, that isn't because of me. Like that, I am lucky to have a really smart and really hands-on team of my editor and my agent, who are also just like, they work together on a lot of other books. They really know each other well. I know them very well. And honestly, like we go through whenever we're coming up with the next book, it's like I'll pitch like 50 ideas. And my editor is really great at figuring out what the right next thing is. I think it would be a little bit more all over the map if it was like down to me to decide what I was doing next. And I don't mean to say like she just like tells me what to write, but it really is like I bring so many ideas, and then we all three will finally like click on one, and that's normally how I know like, oh, that's gonna work. So that's not like helpful advice for people trying to do that. But I also think that like, so much like writing is already so hard that I feel like we get hung up on these little like business hacks, thinking that it's gonna, you know, I don't know, that like if we can just figure out this magic bullet, like then everything's gonna be smooth sailing. And I just feel like that way truly does lie madness, and we're not meant to have to think like that. And it's really helpful when you have like people around you who can kind of nudge you. But I don't know. I really am of the like write what you're most excited about camp, and luckily I just have continued to be excited about this particular kind of book for a few years now.
Cool.
Well, I really want to come back to the idea generating process, but that kind of leads us right, because we like to get just straight into stuff.
Dive in.
So what I admire most about what you do, your books, is that it seems you they are so joyful. And I have heard you talk about them before. Everybody, you can tune in to Emily on the Shit No One Tells You About Writing podcast pretty recently as well. And I think you take a lot of joy in the books and the process. And what I keep coming back to is, how do you give yourself permission to do the fun stuff? I think, and just to try to like make that a slightly better question, like I know that I often find myself thinking, oh, well, I can't do that. That would be too, I don't know, too inside baseball. Or yeah. I can't do that. That's too, like, dependent on people knowing Lifetime movies. Or I can't do that. That's too much. Really, and it all boils down to, I can't do that. That's too much fun. So do you struggle with, like, I can't do that, or that's too much fun?
No.
Or how does that play out for you?
That's so interesting, because I was talking to Catherine Center last night, and her new book, The Bodyguard, came out today.
It's sitting here somewhere.
Oh my gosh, it's fantastic, but it's so fun. And she was kind of saying that for her, that process was that, where she was like, I want to write about a female bodyguard. Here are all the like rich people who need bodyguards. I can't make the person she's guarding an actor, because that's like too fun. And she kept trying to write the book forever. And finally her editor was like, wait, why won't you just make him an actor? Like, that's so fun. And she was like, I know, it's too fun. And she was like, no, we're in a pandemic. Write the like most fun version of this. I don't struggle with that. And I think it's because I started writing this kind of book, the ones that are tightly branded, as like my literal, like it was like my lifeboat. It was like, I was writing like sad YA novels, and I felt like the world was so sad, and I was really struggling, under-medicated severely. And I started writing Beach Read because I was just like, I want to give myself a month to do something fun that feels good. And I had no intention of trying to sell it. I wasn't a romance reader yet. I am now a voracious romance reader, obviously. But at the time, I was just sort of like, I just want to be somewhere nice. And I think because of that, like, I know that that's what that book was for me. And I didn't really expect it to click in the way that it did with an audience. And so then once it did, it was like, okay, well, I want to give them that exact feeling that I was chasing. Like, I want this to be a reprieve from the world. I want it to feel like an escape and a safety net and like all the things that I think romance does so well for us as readers. So yeah, I mean, I if anything, I'm like, I struggle to make them fun enough because I've been mostly doing this during a global pandemic and like the world is just falling apart by the day. So I want them to be pure joy, but it takes some getting there when the world is just not that.
Yeah. We've talked to Catherine Center, so yeah. I should note that episode for everyone, but yeah, I'm very much in the Catherine Center camp. So now I want to, so let's talk about the sad YA. Did I miss some books? Did you publish the sad YA?
Yes, I was doing that before, but it's so different that there's no real like opportunity for, I'm just sort of like, that was the thing I did, you know, that was the thing I did. And now I'm doing this. And I mean, those were really fun, but they were super, super different. And those were, you know, I think maybe the aversion to funness is like, if you're a person who is a wide reader and who is really kind of like interested in academia, whether you're like a part of it or not, there probably is more of that like pressure to do something serious and world changing. And I, you know, I wanted that for myself. That was something I warred with. And then, you know, like I said, Beach Read was just for me. And then when it actually clicked with people, it was like, oh yeah, this is important too. Like, why do we think that the only things that matter are the things that devastate us? Why don't we value joy and love in the same way? And, you know, a lot of us do, but I mean, just overall as a society of like artists, like why is it like, why don't we take things that make us happy as seriously when it's actually like so much harder, I think, to write a happy book than to write a sad book. It's like, I know what makes people sad. I can make you love a character and then kill them. Like, I can do that. And there are readers who will like it. But like, it's harder to make someone laugh. Like, you're not even seeing, you're writing this down in your room by yourself. And then like, publishing it and being like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if people will get the Lifetime movie references. I don't know if they'll care about the insider baseball. I'm amusing myself right now.
Yeah, I love this idea. It reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from George Michael. Somebody asked him at some point, when are you going to write serious music? And he's like, you don't understand. I'm very serious about pop music.
Oh, I love that. I feel like that needs to be like on a pillow, like embroidered somewhere. Yeah,
I agree. And now I have to insist that you both immediately seek out, and that all listeners immediately also seek out, my current passionate book that I'm pushing on everyone, which is This Is Not a Book About Benedict Cumberbatch. Have you seen it?
I have seen that and know nothing about it, but every time I see the title, I'm like, okay, sign me up.
So I have seen it and knew nothing about it. And also, I'm not... And this is not like I'm snotty. This is just I'm boring. I guess I do know who Benedict Cumberbatch is, and I know what Sherlock is, but I don't think I could pick him out of a. If you lined up a lot of similarly aged
yes.
actors in a row of the same that were all white and yes. Britishy looking, I don't know that I could have picked him out. I probably could now because
I can
of the
help
way this
you.
Is...
This I say this with love and respect for him.
He's weird
looking,
fantastic. Right?
He looks like he's made of Play-Doh. Like if you're looking at a lineup, you're like the one who you get to where you're like, is that claymation? That's Benedict Cumberbatch.
I think I could now because of this yeah. book. But so this fantastic book is all about what you just said. It's all about why don't we take the things that we love, and especially the things that women love,
oh, yes.
that are fun for women,
yes.
as seriously, because we can be very serious about cricket. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
or
sports
football.
Are...
football.
Yeah, like sports are technically
sports
silly.
Are...
They're silly. Like,
so silly.
It's the exact same thing as LARPing. Like, it's people putting on, like, it's silly, and that's great. Like, silly things yeah. are, like, the spice of life. Like, they matter. But, yeah, they're ridiculous.
Right. And that's her whole point. That's why this is not a book about Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah. She's like, I got really into this actor in part And she never is like, you know, she's never like, he's just a metaphor. She's like, no, I'm still really into this actor. Yeah. So that makes it even more fun. But it's in part because I had just had these children and I had nothing for myself and I had nothing of myself and I was expected to have nothing of myself. And I needed something. And then she struggles for like years to be like, how could it be okay that I'm so into Sherlock, right? And finally, she, you know, I don't know, for all of us, it's like, be into the stupid thing you're into. Yeah. Please, just love that thing. And I love this book so much now, and I'm going to, like, force it
on that sounds
every
great.
Known human being.
I'm signed up already. I'm there.
And it's just, it's a light, fun read that we can love without... You know, there'll be no crying. Benedict Cumberbatch does not die.
That would be quite the twist if she managed to pull that off.
Also, I think problematic. Yeah. Like, I feel like there would
lawsuits
be
lawsuits waiting to happen. Yeah. Yeah. Like, this especially... is a threat, I'm thinking.
Right. Like, please don't do that. So really what we're kind of boiling down to is how do we figure out how to... It's fine to write the other stuff, like you said, if that's who you are and that's sort of what's given to you. But for so many of us, what's given to us is let's enjoy this.
Well, and I think, you know, accepting, first of all, that if you're good at that, like, that's hard to do. So do that. You know, like, my mom recently was like, you're going to say that you don't remember this. And she was right. I don't remember it. But she was like, when you were publishing your YA novels, I told you... you should be writing comedy. And you said, Mom, you don't understand. Comedy is so hard to write. And I was like, I don't remember this conversation, but I believe you. And I still feel that way. It's like the whole time I'm writing, I'm like, I truly have no idea if this is garbage or not. So if you're a person who's like, ooh, I want to do something serious. I feel like I know what kind of book we'll say is a quote good book. And that's what I want to do because I'll get respect and I'll feel like I'm validated and I'm worthy
men
and whatever.
Men might read
yes.
it.
Men might read it. Yeah.
Maybe.
So, what a thrill. So if you're stuck on that, but that's not what comes out of you naturally, just accept that maybe what comes out of you naturally is like something those other people couldn't do either. You know, like that doesn't, I don't know. It's like, I had to at some point accept like, I mean, and I will probably write some other more like sad, serious books at some point, but it was like, okay, I do thrive in just writing two people talking for 380 pages, and maybe I should do that.
I want to dig in for 1 second to the question of like a good book, a serious book, a sad book, because I think that one of the reasons that you're having so much success is that you can find a way to make a big book out of people talking for 380 pages. So you can write a really, the universal you. One can write a romance novel that has low stakes, and that's okay. But how do you think about upping the stakes when you're mid-plotting so that you end up with a big book that's also a joy book?
Yeah. Wow. Well, the big book question, again, is that thing that just feels like an utter mystery to me where I'm like, I don't know that I can replicate it, which is why every time I have a new book come out, I'm like, this is it. This is when it all goes downhill. But as far as stakes, again, like my editor is so good at just pushing me harder and harder with the stakes of something. And, you know, it's like, I feel like in real life, like an example is like in real life, you might just like avoid telling someone something because you're like, I really hate conflict so much. And that is the only reason I'm not going to come out and like say this thing that needs to be said. And in real life, it's like we do that all the time. It's like we make decisions based on this really inconcrete thing. There's not like a real fear. You're like, I just don't want to feel discomfort. Like that drives so much of our decisions is like avoiding discomfort. But in a book, you know, that's going to drive readers up a wall if you're like, why are they like, what is the decision making?
That's the book where you're yelling the whole time. Yes. Just tell him. Yes. Just say it.
Right.
Just do it.
Even though in real life,
those are frustrating.
That's like good. In real life, that's good enough logic for most of us. It's how we live. But in a book, it's like you have to make things realer than real life. So you're like, here's a very good reason why this person cannot say this. Here is a real concrete reason why saying this would disrupt something, like on a viewable level, like on a thing that you can actually see shift, rather than just it could mess everything up. So my editor is really, really good. I mean, the book I'm working on right now, it's like 300 notes that are like, but why can't they be together? So it's like, I mean, she's really good at that, because it's like, I so often will start from that vague point of view that feels true to real life, where you're like, well, they just can't. They just can't get it together.
Because it makes them really anxious.
Yeah, right, exactly. She's just never going to say no to someone about anything. She'd rather die. But you really do have to make everything realer than real life. I think I don't know how you two feel, but that's how I feel. It's like the thing that readers will pick out and be like, this would never happen in your book, like, is always the thing that you pulled straight from real life. You're like, no, that is the one detail of this book that happened to me or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's just so many of us are like, I can't even tell the person in the aisle seat that I have to go pee.
literally. That's a moment in the book that I'm working on right now.
Oh, no,
just,
really?
Yeah, because that is me. It's like I choose the aisle seat because then I won't have to ask anyone. Like every time it's like, yeah, I'll pay extra money to sit in the aisle, which is not my favorite seat. The window is my favorite seat, but I don't want to have to ask someone to go pee. No.
No, because what if they've dozed off? Yeah. Or what if they're, like, I was sitting by a much older gentleman who had also dozed off and was also a little too big for me to crawl over.
Yeah.
You know, this is a problem, right? This is a whole...
Right.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
In real, like, in a book, you're like, there's no real impediment. Yeah.
Right. In a book, it would have to be, and once... You know, she asked the guy to get up, and he got up and had a heart attack in the aisle.
Right, exactly.
And he died, and it was all her fault. And she never recovered.
Yeah,
so and it was her father.
Right, literally. Yeah. So, Serena, there's your answer, is what KJ's saying. Like, that's the thing. It's like you have to make something feel like the stakes are really big. It's like you have to do that instead of, like, I hate inconveniencing people. You're like, why do you hate inconveniencing people? What terrible thing befell you the last time you inconvenienced someone?
And how can you learn that inconvenience? You have the right
yes.
to inconvenience people.
And now we have
people.
380 pages worth of conversation, and the goal is at the end, you're going to inconvenience someone.
This is a book.
It's a book.
I could write this book.
Please do.
Easily. Yeah, easily, because... We do need to learn, of course, and the great thing about the book, too, is that at the end of 380 pages, you believe Nora will now inconvenience people or whatever. That's
right.
Not what Nora learns.
Yeah.
But whereas in real life, we'd all be like, and the next day I got on a plane.
She had to do it again.
I sat by the window.
Yeah.
And when I got off, I practically peed myself.
Yes, exactly. That's so true.
I learned nothing. Right.
380 pages, and now we're just starting over. Sequel.
Yeah. This is not a book about peeing on airplanes. There
yes.
we go. That's the book that I'm writing next. So, besides the part where we convince ourselves that we don't have to write very deep, very serious books, which I think you've probably glossed over that process for yourself, what is the hardest, what's the easiest part of writing for you, and what's the hardest part?
The easiest part usually really is the dialogue, like assuming I know anything about the characters. Mm-hmm. If I'm struggling to find the characters, then I can really feel it in the dialogue, and that feels terrible because it's like, this is the one thing that I'm supposed to know how to do, and why isn't it working? And the whole book hinges on that working, and if it's not happening, then it's like there is no book. So that's both the easiest and the hardest in a way. I think... the hardest. I don't know. I mean, I think the writing process, I don't know how you two feel. Like like Serena, like 2022 USA Today bestsellers. Like I'm only, like if you count my YA novels, I've published 7 books, and every single time it still feels terrible and hard pretty much from start to finish. And then like, then you publish it, and then it's terrible and hard in other ways. And you know, there's things that are so amazing about it. but I don't know. It's just hard. Like, for me, it's hard from start to finish, other than if the dialogue is flowing. It just feels like every single day there is this fear that I have to surmount to sit down and actually write. And, like, you know, that's why I draft very quickly, is because if I lose that momentum, it's really hard for me to get my grasp on it again. But it's like every day that I'm drafting, I like wake up with a pit in my stomach, and it doesn't go away until I start writing, because it's like I'm just so afraid of messing it up. I'm so afraid of breaking it before I've even like formed it.
I have to tell you,
I just think it's all hard.
I'm exactly the same way. And if I really? Step away, yeah, if I step away from a no! project,
she's at like what, 35?
Yeah, something like that.
It's no very hope for depressing. Us. Yeah, there's no hope for
but
us.
If I walk away from a project for a few days, I fear it more. Like, the fear just grows.
Same. Yeah. Same. It's like you become avoidant of it, mm-hmm. and you're just like, yeah, and you know, some people are really afraid of that first page because they're like, okay, here we go. Time to put it into from my head onto the page. And it's really not the first page that scares me. It's just every single page after that.
Right. All the on pages. The first yeah. page, nothing has yeah. gone wrong yet. Like, you're still, right. you're still brilliant.
You're like, this is perfect. Yeah. Yes,
the
right.
best
you're still
book
brilliant.
Is the one you haven't
oh,
written.
Yeah.
Those
exactly.
are so good. I have so, those are great. Yeah.
That is
some really fine ones.
Painfully true. Painfully true. And again, that's the thing where if you have an idea, the longer you put it off, the scarier it gets too, I think, where it's like, it feels too ambitious and yeah, you're just like, maybe not.
Yeah, I probably can't do that. Maybe I could do that later when I'm older and I know more.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, never hold. Never hold the ideas. I want to just note for readers that Beach Read was your fourth book.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, like I said, the others are
totally
so different.
But
yeah.
But it doesn't matter. It's like the Book Riot podcast, which I love, has this total joke about Taylor Jenkins Reid's debut novel. Because he didn't know all her previous and he referred
wow.
to it at some point. Well, it was Daisy Jones, and he thought it was her, you know. And so now it's this running joke. They call everything Taylor Jenkins Reid's
debut. Oh, my gosh.
So it's that. I mean, it's, and Catherine Center's the same way. You know, the overnight success that wasn't at all. It's
never.
Just that's when you see the person. So,
yeah, and that's the way it should
that.
Be. I mean, I feel like I'm so grateful that I had that other, like, mid-list career before this, because I think I would have... There, it's like only a couple of different things could have happened. Like, I could have become a monster of a human being, or I could have really freaked myself out and
frozen.
Just never written another word. So,
yeah. Well, congratulations on not doing both of those.
Thank you so far.
So the last thing that we usually talk about is what we've been reading. So let's just take a pause. Well, I'll take a little deep breath, and then we'll ask you what's something great you have been reading lately. So what's something great you've been reading lately?
I am like so ready for this. I have three books. Can I touch
yes,
on three? Okay. I
you
have,
can, especially since I basically already did mine.
Okay, cool. So, the first one is Miss Aldridge Regrets by Louise Hare. It's sort of this Agatha Christie-esque mystery set on a ship from London to New York. And I think it's like in the 20s, 30s. I don't remember exactly when it is set, but it's so good and like decadent and sexy and fun and twisty. So I loved that so much. I'll shout out again, Catherine Center's The Bodyguard was like one of my favorite rom-coms of all time. Just so fun and cute and smart and just everything I love about Catherine Center. And then the last one, which I will say like has like every single trigger warning that I normally avoid, but I just devoured it, was Kirsten Miller's The Change, which was fantastic.
I am reading that right now. I'm about halfway through. I could not put it down last night. And I'm only, and it's huge, and I'm only like a third of the way through. And I'm like, no, you really have to put this down.
The way that I think, I was just talking about this, but there's this state of reading that I think of as reading a book like it's a curse. And that's how The Change felt to me, where it was like, I need this book out of my system because it's so intense. It's like, I need to know what happens, but I also need to be able to move on with my life. And so I will be doing nothing else until I am done with this book.
It's very hard to interact with any men in your life while you're reading that.
True.
Because you're just like...
So mad.
Also you!
Yeah, I mean, I kind of love, like, it honestly kind of gave me the vibe of more the Big Little Lies adaptation than the book, but mm-hmm. the feeling that every man, even the good ones, you're sort of like, but are you? And, like, I do think that's how it feels to be a woman in the world. You're like, the people, even
especially
the people
now.
You trust, you're like, are, like... I think that you're one of the good ones, but are you?
I trust you and you love it, but you cannot, you and I love you, but you cannot possibly understand.
Yeah, oh.
Do you understand that you don't understand?
No, right, exactly.
That's the question, right? If yeah. you could just get that, but you don't, because they're like, no, I'm one of the good ones.
Right, and you're like, nobody right. cares
Sorry,
that you're one
listeners.
Of the good ones.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to second The Bodyguard. I just read it on a plane and it was terrific. And also,
so
and I
good.
Was sitting next to her, and she shrieked with banshee-like laughter regularly. And I was working, so the You're level like, of resentment that
yes,
I had was
immense.
Extremely high.
Yes.
And then also, I just read, and it's completely in the sad, difficult category, but oh my goodness, Upgrade by Blake Crouch.
Oh, I have it. I haven't started it
it's
yet.
It's so good. But... and... I really did enjoy Recursion, which was his last big, you know, twisty,
right,
oddball thriller. And this one is just as speculative and weird, but I actually feel like it's a more compact, bigger punch of a book. And I'm reading along furiously, like, can he land this plane, you know? And he does. And the end is very
oh,
poignant.
That's amazing.
I know. I closed it and I was so impressed.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, honestly, speaking, Dark Matter was, it was another one of those books that was like, read it like a curse, because it was like, yeah, and it was heavy. It was so hard. It's like the happy ending you get is like, has so many asterisks after it, where yeah. you're like, it's a happy ending, wink. yeah, he's fantastic. Also, I don't know if you've watched the adaptation, he had that Letty Dobesh like series that I think might have been self-published, I'm not sure, but there was a TV show that ran for 2 seasons called Good Behavior. There's an adaptation of those novels, and it was so good but so intense, and I wish more people had watched it so it hadn't gotten canceled.
Well, we'll shout out all of that in the show notes,
Yay.
As we do. And y'all know, because I already said, that you must go immediately. I require it. You must all go immediately and get This Is Not a Book About Benedict Cumberbatch, because it's not a book about Benedict Cumberbatch. It's a book about all of us. But as long as we're shouting out things in the rom-com genre, I think I've mentioned this before, and I will again, but I want to make sure that Emily knows that you must read Thank You for Listening by Julia Wheeler.
Yes.
Oh, you've done it, isn't it?
Yes.
So perfect.
So good.
Pitch perfect.
Painfully good. I mean, it like made me ache the whole
yes.
time. So good.
Yeah. So good. So if you finished Book Lovers and The People We Made on Vacation and Beach Read and you need something, well, you're going to have to wait a little while because it's not out. No, by the time this airs, it will be out.
Yeah.
I forgot. This is a fall. This is coming out. We're talking early, people. Sorry about that. But the good news is you can already go get this. Thank you for listening. So, well, thank you for coming, Emily.
Thank you.
Is there anywhere you hang out on social media that people could follow you and have
yes,
a good time?
Yes, I am on Instagram at Emily Henry Writes, and if you click the link in my bio, you can also sign up for my newsletter there. It says, like, read my grocery list, and you just sign up there, and all, like, my news, any news I have goes there first, so that's a good way to connect,
cool.
too.
All right. Love it. Well, thank you so, so much for joining us today. Serena, you want to roll us out of here with our usual tagline?
I would love to. We will see you in the Am Writing Podcast Facebook group. But until then, keep your butts in the chair and your heads in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop. Stop. Thank you.